Dr. Hatem, how are you?
Very good. How are you, Suhail?
I'm doing very well. And so today, you know, I have, you know, my first guest for Financial Network TV, where we want to share some really exciting, inspiring, innovative people from around the world. And it's a real privilege and honor to have Dr. Hatem, who's not only one of the best innovators that I know, but has been a mentor, kind of like a father figure to me. I've known Hatem, I think, for over 30 years. You know, Hatem used to actually be a teacher and kind of a guide to me. And this is going back when I was, I think, 10 or 12. And Hatem, you may remember better. And
yes.
So Hatem, you know, has seen me literally grow up from a kid and a teenager to a nice, you know, mature young man.
Distinguished.
Yes. So I have them welcome to the Financial Network TV podcast and the video here. And we look forward to you know, getting your insights and your inspiration and learning from your experiences.
Thank you for having me.
So without further ado, Hatem, you know, give us a brief introduction in terms of what you do and your background, and then we'll get into some specifics and cover the past 30 years, essentially, and how you've been an innovator in the telecom wireless space.
Well, again, thank you for having me here. I'm an Egyptian by birth, Canadian by immigration. I studied electronics and communications in Cairo University in Egypt and graduated in 79. Then did some mathematics work. I was, you know, towards a Bachelor of Mathematics in Shams University. Then I did a master's and a PhD in physics from Calgary University. I did a little stunted work in the oil industry with Schlumberger. And, you know, my PhD in physics was in electromagnetics. So you put electromagnetics with communications and you get wireless communications. Yes. So that's my educational background.
Yes. And I think one of the most remarkable things is, you know, the whole invention of wireless and Wi-Fi as we know it. And very few people, and I think you don't get the credit, you and, you know, Dr. Fatosh, for, you know, the work that you did on wireless technology. And you essentially are the co-inventor of Wi-Fi as we know it today. Give us a little bit of a background on that and how that came about.
We don't get credit. We didn't just invent Wi-Fi, the high-speed Wi-Fi we use. We actually invented all high-speed mobile wireless communications. So, you know, of course, not alone, you know, a lot of people contributed, but there are cornerstone patents that solve fundamental problems that without them, there would have been no high-speed communications. And that's the role of our two patents, the WOFDM patent and the multicode patent. In any case, the WOFDM is the foundation technology for the high-speed Wi-Fi, the WiMAX technology, and then the LTE, the high-speed download in LTE, as well as you know, all the speed in 5G. That all is based on the OFDM technology. The multicode was responsible for the speed in 3G. From 2G to 3G, the speed was because of the multicode patent. So, you know, that's our contributions. How it came about is I started working for TELUS, a phone company in Alberta, and they wanted me to define for them which is the best 2G technology. 1G was just an FM radio. If you had an FM scanner, you could hear, you know, the calls. 2G was the first digital technology. So we studied, and you know, I had moved away from communications for a while. So I asked TELUS to allow me to give a contract to my friend and partner, Dr. Michel Fatouche. And together we studied this technology, and we lucked out phenomenally because TELUS at that time bought Novatel, which was the biggest cellular manufacturer in the world at the time. Yes. So we started doing the same project for Novatel as well as TELUS. So we had suddenly 24 PhDs in communications working with us. So, you know, it became a powerhouse. And we studied and concluded that GSM, it was the best technology, but it wasn't available at the time. And we recommended IS-54, which was available to use immediately if they wanted to be first. Right. And we wrote at the end of the report that all these technologies were bad because we, Michelle and I, recognized that once the users tasted high speed, you know, they got digital communications and they got speeds up to 250 kilobits per second, they are not gonna get enough, you know. So we recognize that once you give people a little bit of speed, they will never be satiated with speed. So we, you know, recommended other technologies and, you know, back then they were in a rush and other reasons, they refused. So Michelle and I set out to develop this WFDM technology that solved basic fundamental problems, like I said, in high-speed communications. And we filed a patent in 92. We invented the technology in 91. Just so people get an idea, when we used to send those patent documents to each other over the internet, we used to send them at 300 to 1200 bits per second.
Wow.
You know, the foundations that was talking about 100 megabits per second was moving at 300 bits per second.
Wow. And this is back in 1992, you know, before people even had the concept of digital communications or wireless. And this essentially laid the foundation for the digital revolution.
Absolutely. We back then, that 300 bits per second was achieved by what's called data over voice. The data used to be converted to voice sounds, you know, like the modem sounds.
Yes, yes.
And that was data over voice. We literally, you know, had to plug in the handset into, you know, two rubber thingies and, you know, it's a voice communications. We recognize that everything is going to be over data, voice over data, video over data, everything over data. We recognize that, and we defined at that time personal communications as communications between anybody and anything, anywhere, at any time. We still haven't achieved that goal fully because IoT is part of it, and you know all other concepts in personal communications are part of it.
Yes. Okay, no, and this is back in 1992, and that led to the formation of WLAN, your first company, and the company that eventually went public was a huge success story. It was, I think, one of the TSX best performing companies. Give us a little bit of an overview. I think, so in 1992, WLAN was incorporated, I believe, as you registered these patents. And then in 1999, if I recall correctly, WLAN went public.
1998, yeah.
1998, so about 5 years later. And this is, of course, during the dot-com boom. And I was still in university, I think, 98, third year. And tell us about that experience, and because the numbers and how WLAN performed during that period was phenomenal.
What we tried to do was, of course, you know, at the time I was a researcher and, you know, this was, the OFDM was our third patent, I believe. You know, so, you know, we had an energy of inventing and, you know, innovation. So we tried to sell the patent idea. And we sent letters to a lot of companies, and that didn't go far. You know, Apple didn't want to sign an NDA, Siemens signed an NDA and sent someone to review, and AT&T signed an NDA and sent it to a company to do due diligence on it. But really, that didn't move far. Someone came to us and said, you're doing this the wrong way. You should be starting a company, building a prototype, and starting to sell, showing people that this is a real thing, and then you can sell it. And we liked that idea, and we said, okay, we'll, he said, just give me a year of your life, and we'll do something big then. And we agreed, and we started working with him, and, you know, took about 10 months from, we started work in January of 93 in WLAN. And in October of 93, we did a demo of our technology NetWorld conference, in Dallas, and that was a very big success. We had every big company, Microsoft, Intel, came and saw the demo. Some in our offices afterwards, and they all agreed that this is the future, but they agreed it needed to be miniaturized into the, PCMCIA card back then. And we agreed, and we started, making rounds and rounds of miniaturization until 1997, when it became the foundation of the proposals for the high-speed Wi-Fi in the IEEE. And at that time, we recognized, it's time to take the company public. We had, we're close to profitability at the time, and we took the company public in 98 and led from the Canadian point of view the boom of 2000. And we actually incorporated another company called Cellock in 95. And that company went public first in 97. Cellock was in the business of locating cellular phones. Yes. Without GPS or anything else, with us was the infrastructure of the cellular company. And we used to be able to locate the phone to within 1.5 meters, which was phenomenal. We used something called super resolution to do that. And basically, we took those two companies public. And in 2000, they were number one and number two performers, the top two performers on the Toronto Stock Exchange in Canada.
Wow, no, that's impressive. And I recall, I think Wylan, because Wylan is actually really special because it was the first IPO I participated in, and I recall during the peak it went up to like $94, I think, or 98. It was just shy of 100 during its peak.
Nice. And I think 94, yeah, or 94, 92, I don't remember. 90, yeah.
Something like that. And at that point, I remember Nortel and even Cellock, I think, went up to 40.
$84.
Oh, did it go up to 84? Oh my
God. Yeah.
That's because I wasn't too active in Cellock. I was quite an active investor and a trader in Wyland, because there were just only a handful of tech companies during that time in Canada. Nortel, Wyland, Mitel, we could literally name them. And it was quite a remarkable period. Now, after the dot-com and how much capital did you raise, Dr. Hatham, in the IPO, if you recall?
No, the IPO of Cellock was, I think, like $1 million only. And Cellock was a better performer by numbers, because the IPO was at 40 cents and it went up to $84. So yes, it went up over 200 times. And some people bought, don't want to talk about too much about this, shares at less than a cent at some point. Yes, so these people made phenomenal amounts of money, phenomenal returns. Yes. Wylan, the lowest people bought at was 50 cents and it went up to $92. So, but it went public at 250. We raised $10 million, I believe, for Wylan when we went public. We raised 50 million or 15 million after that, then 50 million. And we raised, I think, in total about 300 million for Wylan over the years. And for Cellock, probably about $100 million.
Okay. And how did it feel like, at that time? I think, I remember you were featured in a lot of local media. You were named as one of the top Canadians at Maclean's magazine, and you were the CEO of a multi-billion-dollar company at that point, and it happened very quickly. In a relatively short period of time. What are some of the kind of the lessons perhaps you could share with our guests and other innovators that are thinking of doing an IPO, and some words of wisdom from that experience? And
the most important thing is, don't let your own success fool you. Don't get drunk on your own drinks, Okay. So don't look back, always look forward. You've got goals to achieve. Don't let the successes of the past stop you from achieving the goals in the future, and always set harder goals. I mean, one of my, sort of problems at WLAN was, you know, we had the goal of making this a standard. Well, it became a standard. We had the goal of, you know, pushing for something like 4G. We pushed for 4G and it was starting. So, you know, we had big goals, but we achieved them. So, you know, we should have had bigger goals even.
And you've seen the evolution of telecom and wireless from literally 1G, 2G to 3G, and even 4G, which is something that you were working on back in the early 2000s or late 1990s. Give a little bit of a background on wireless technology, because most people aren't really, you know, they use the phones, the devices, and we take 4G. I recall, you know, I started using 4G about 3 years ago, right, when we upgraded the phones. And yes, obviously, you notice a big performance boost. And now coverage is pretty much, there's no issue with coverage. And now we're getting into 5G. But, you know, in terms of the past 20 years, and then what I want to do is, you know, you've been involved pretty much at each stage of the evolution of the wireless sector. Give us a little bit of background, Dr. Hatham, and then in the second part, what I'd like to do is really go into some of the great work that you're doing with 6G and innovation and mesh technology.
Great. Now, the you know, let's take communications. Is you know, I used to call them like in circles. So the smallest circle, the one closest to you, is what one would call personal networks, you know, like, and they would include your Bluetooth, your near field communications devices, and so on. Then you have a local area network, and that's your Wi-Fi and things like that. And then you have a wide area network. These are three distinct networks you're in. Unfortunately, the worst of them to this day are the very near ones, the personal ones. Bluetooth is not 100%. Very often you put the headphones on and it does not connect, you know, and it's a, you know, a limitation of the technology. So it uses a form of OFDM, but the protocol is not as solid as the Wi-Fi protocol. So, you know, we need some work on that still, but, you know, thinking about it this way, that you have the personal network, the local network, the wide area network. The wide area network, if we take it from that side, is based on the mobile technologies, the mobile technologies. That started, like I said, from just regular FM to GSM to now, you know, the 3G and 4G. You know, basically we had, like we said, you know, the industry, like I said before, you know, 2G peaked at about 250 kilobits per second, and people very quickly recognized that's a major limitation. So they started looking at what they would call a 3G. Now, 3G officially is the last high-speed technology, meaning by that we had analog, not digital.
Right.
We had digital, and then we had high speed. There was nothing past high speed. So we came and recognized that even 3G has its speed limitation with the technologies they were using. So we wanted to use OFDM, like Wi-Fi, in a Wi-Fi-like technology. We started something called the OFDM Forum to harmonize OFDM technologies in use so that you can use the same designs, the same chipsets, in more than one technology. So you use it in the personal, the local, and the wide area networks. And basically we pushed for that, and we, based on the OFDM forum, recommended the what's called the WiMAX technology, or the for wide area networks, and it was high speed. But we had a vision. Our vision was outdoors, you use WiMAX, which is a variation of Wi-Fi, and indoors you use Wi-Fi. You know, as soon as you go indoors, you either suffer with using the WiMAX from outdoors to indoors, or you use the Wi-Fi indoors. And, you know, it would have been a complementarity of networks. And the reason we wanted that is it would have been very inexpensive. WiMAX is a, relatively speaking, very inexpensive technology. And we formed the WiMAX Forum with Nokia and Ensemble and two other companies. And we led it, the WiMAX Forum, for About 3 years, from 2002 to 2005, and we got a lot of companies to join through, you know, advertising and promoting the forum, and eventually, you know, it became a standard, and people started accepting the term 4G. You know, so officially there is no 4G, but because the group that is responsible to issue now the 4G and 5G and 6G standard is called the 3G Partnership Project. So 3G okay. is the last official, you know, technology, or the last official speed. But in any case, so we convinced people to go for 4G, and we used to tell them a very funny thing. You can go to 4G in 2002 and 2003 using WiMAX, or wait for the long-term evolution of the cellular network, which is a bad thing.
Yeah.
They shortened long-term evolution to LTE, and it became the winner, and everybody loves it and is proud he's using LTE. He does not understand he used an inferior technology, you know, to build the networks. Eventually, then we went on to, I left the communications arena because the company we formed, Wiland, converted itself in 2006 to be a patent enforcement company, because no one paid us, or very few companies paid us amicably, you know, our dues. So we had to sue companies, and I didn't want to be the CEO or the chairman of a company that sues other companies. And yes. I stepped out of the communications industry. I was only a witness in that patent case.
Right.
So I stayed away till 2015. I was watching the 5G, and you know, there are minor issues with the 5G. There are two 5G technologies, or two 5G frequencies. One at the low end, which is about 6 gigahertz. That is not very different than the 5.8 gigahertz that Wi-Fi, the higher end of the Wi-Fi, works at. Yes. So we know that frequency very well. The second frequency that's planning to use is around 58 gigahertz. Wow. And that's very close to the absorption peak of oxygen.
Okay.
We didn't study that frequency too much.
Okay.
So we need to be careful a bit more okay. with that side of things until we know that frequency much more.
Absolutely. And I think that's some of the concerns, and there's, various organizations, people that are, you know, raising alarms about the safety of 5G. And when they're, so that is because, you know, and again, I think, you know, some have been labeled as conspiracy theorists, you know, that this is a government plot, and others are just being cautious. Where do you sit in terms of the safety aspects of 5G at, you know, 50, is it 58 gigahertz? Or,
yeah.
You know, which is...
At the high end, I say we just need to be a little bit more careful. You know, I'm not saying at all, I'm not an alarmist, and I'm not saying, you know, it's bad. No, I'm saying we just needed more tests, especially about the peak of the oxygen. Oxygen is not just vital, is life, you know. Yes. So, you know, we can't be heating oxygen before we breathe it. We can't be heating oxygen by having a phone in our hands. Now, my bigger issue with the 5G at that frequency is that it is really meant for the autonomous cars and for the fourth industrial revolution and all these things. You know, my issue is that is why do I, as an average user, pay for such technologies? You know, like I will be the one carrying most of the burden for someone driving an autonomous car. Well, that's not fair. You know, someone who buys an autonomous car should pay five times as much as me for, you know, the infrastructure. Second, you know, the speeds that they're talking about, 30 gigabits per second, which mobile phone can handle that speed?
Yes.
You know, our share of it, my share as a user, will never be more than 700 megabits. And I'm saying, sorry, this never, I mean, you know, with our mobile technology of today, of course, in 10 years, we may need it, but let it come in 10 years then.
Right.
You know,
right.
Don't give me 30 gigabits per second when my phone can only handle 700.
Yes. No, that's a great point. And that's actually a great kind of a closing into our part two, in which we're going to specifically talk about, you know, 5G and more importantly, 6G and some of the technologies that you're working on, Dr. Hatham, to basically leapfrog, you know, from 4G to 6G. But before we go into part two, you know, I want to take a couple of minutes, Dr. Hatham, and get to know, get the users to know you a little bit better. And I'm going to do a few rapid fire questions. We're going to do just five rapid fire questions. The top answer that comes to your mind, you know, please do share and let's have a little bit of fun. So the first rapid fire question is, what's your favorite food? Your favorite food?
Oh, it would be kebab.
Kebab. All right. That's in line with my favorite food lineup. And what's your favorite country to visit?
Actually, I love the whole world. Every country has its beauty. Okay. So no
That's
country
very
comes
nice
to
political
mind.
Answer, but we'll take it. And what is the best business advice that you've ever received?
Well, actually, it is very simple. But you know, when I started Wyland, someone told me, with the employees, be very careful. Once a gift, twice a habit, three times a right. So be very careful how you deal with the employees and, yes, you know, what you set up and so on. And we set up a very productive company with that advice.
Perfect. No, that's great advice. And what's your thoughts on the U.S. elections, Trump or Biden?
Well, who would have expected Trump to win the first one?
So you're thinking Trump could still do it again. He could pull a rabbit.
This guy can pull rabbits out of nowhere.
And in terms of the trade war and what's happening with the U.S. and China, in 10 years, who do you think is going to be the dominant technology player in the world?
I don't know why you're asking about 10 years. I think in 2 years, China is already ahead of the U.S. by
Is
far.
It?
Already now, you know, and that's the whole reason for the trade war. It's losing status. You know, the Apple, which is the cream of products in the U.S., is not number one anymore.
Yes.
So, perfect. You know.
All right. No, thank you so much, Dr. Hatham. And we will come to part two in a few minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.